Hey, this is Carl Kozlowski with...
Hey,
how are you? With The Cause Effect. And I'm going to be talking right now with Paul Kinger. And by way of introduction to everybody out there, Paul is a professor of political science at Grove City College. His books include The Crusader, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of Communism, and Dupes, How America's Adversaries Have Manipulated Progressives for a Century. His next book is a profile of Obama mentor Frank Marshall Davis, scheduled for release later this year. And we're going to be talking with him about his really interesting current cover story in the American Spectator. Actually, it was the March cover story, but people can still find it online, I'm sure, at spectator.org. And it's called Obama's Red Handler, Meet David Axelrod. And just by way of explanation, because this is the first show I'm doing of The Cause Effect, I've got... it's sort of a Bill Maher kind of a show, as people are hearing, but we're going to have sometimes people that are very conservative talking and sometimes people from the complete opposite end of the spectrum. So just letting people know that, you know, if you but I think we'll find people that are interesting and just keep your mind open and absorb what they have to say. And might open your way of thinking one direction or the other, depending on the guest of the week. So first off, I just want to say thanks, Mr. Kinger, for being part of this. And by way of explanation to people, David Axelrod is somebody that a lot of people have seen if they're into politics. He's sort of the sleepy-eyed looking guy with a little kind of walrus mustache. I'm not even trying to be mean. I'm trying to be kind of cutesy about him. He's sort of endearing, you know, since they're like, it looks like a sad sack and talks about, you know, he's a big advisor to Obama and a very powerful guy. He's basically... I always thought that he was like Obama's right-hand man, speaking as a spokesman for Obama. But judging from your article, it sounds like he might be sort of like what people said about Dick Cheney with President Bush. He's sort of actually, in a way, in a lot of ways, sort of a string puller. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yeah, no, I think it is. I mean, he's David Axelrod is the chief strategist who carved out the Obama hope and change message. So, I mean, you know, you couldn't have a more significant impact. I mean, he was the shaper of the message. He was the composer of the theme. I mean, every you know, the very essence of Obama and Obamaism is can be credited to Axelrod. I mean, he took this senator from Illinois, this young senator from Illinois in 2007. Axelrod was based in Chicago. He's from New York originally, but he went to college at the University of Chicago and then stayed in Chicago, cut his teeth there, started writing for the Hyde Park Herald, and then eventually the Chicago paper, the Sun-Times. And from there, he went into political consulting, Paul Simon, others, national campaigns, presidential campaigns, and he latched on to Obama, and he saw in Obama this you know, this marvel of unique historical significance. Who, as Axelrod said, you know, to get someone like Obama elected president would be a really special thing. For my life, for history. And he went out and he did it, and he's been sort of quiet, at least people would think, but he's not. He's working behind the scenes for the past few years. But he's now, right now, back in Chicago, tasked with, once again, getting Obama elected president.
Yeah, so... it's interesting because your article is very expansive about this guy's life. And the thing is, okay, what you're trying to get across is early on in the story is about the influences that had an effect on Axelrod. Because basically any politician, any human being that's worth anything in this world, you're shaped by either family or other outside influences and mentors. And you paint a picture of Axelrod as growing up the son of in a liberal Jewish household, kind of secularly Jewish, culturally Jewish in New York. And but that his mom, in particular, had ties to an early controversial publication called PM. And right. I thought it was kind of strange, like, if you could elaborate about that. But also, you point out that you went looking through tons of microfiche trying to find any contributions from her, and there's nothing there. Is that something odd, do you think? I mean, if you explain PM and her, regardless of this, but is there anything worth wondering? Well, gee, why is there no record of her? And does that parallel some of the mysterious holes? And I'm not going birther necessarily, but there are holes in Obama's past where we're not allowed to see his school records. We're not allowed to, you know, he never wrote a damn thing for the Harvard Law Review despite being in charge of it. So, I mean, just wondering, is there any parallels there that you think that people are trying to hide something from her, or that she overstated her accomplishments?
Well, it's a good question, and it could just be one of those things where, I mean, basically, PM operated out of New York, a daily from 1940 to 1948, and Axelrod's mom, this was basically her first job in journalism, not just right out of college, but when she was in college at NYU, majoring in journalism. And at that point, her name was Merrill Bennett. Her maiden name is Merrill Bennett. She married Joseph Axelrod later. But I'll tell you, I couldn't find a single article. And I did notice, Carl, that a lot of articles didn't carry a byline, a tagline, an author's name. So it could be that, you know, she's kind of a junior writer, low level staff. Maybe she's writing these things and she doesn't get a byline. I was able to sort of glean from different research that she covered education, but I couldn't even confirm that. And it's an important question, because PM was an excellent illustration of some of the battles that you get among the American left. And what happened was, PM was run by progressive liberals, and these were true progressives who were not communists cloaked as progressives. And the magazine had been penetrated by American communists and American Stalinists, some of whom were calling themselves progressives and liberals. And this has been going on for a long, long time. And the communists on the paper were trying to get the paper to toe a pro-Stalin line. And so PM is just being ripped apart at the seams by these duplicitous, conniving communists that are getting in there and using the liberals and using this liberal paper. And so the question that I really wanted to find out was, you know, where was Merrill Bennett, right? Was she one of the genuine liberals? Was she, you know, possibly one of the communists, the pro-Stalin folks? Was she a liberal being used by the Stalinists? Was she a smart liberal who knew who the bad guys were? And I couldn't find any of that. So I could tell you that generally she was on the left. But I wish I knew more, and I wasn't able to figure that out.
So
still alive, by the way.
She is?
She is still alive. Yeah,
wow.
She lives in a nursing home in Massachusetts, I believe, near Boston.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, so, but then more importantly, to Axelrod's development, and this starts looping into where this goes with Obama, this whole thing, it's a fascinating story, so bear with us, folks, and you'll be hearing some things that are just like, whoa, what's going on here? Some of Obama's, Axelrod's mentors were two guys named Don Rose and David Cantor,
right.
And they were much more directly connected. You make it clear that you're not saying that Axelrod's a communist necessarily. Nobody's alleging that here on the show or otherwise, but... However, these guys that influenced him happen to be, and I got to say, you know, my best friend in the world is a guy who's a diehard liberal, and he has had a lot of influence on me in some aspects of life. I still am a free-thinking person that I'm a Ron Paul fan, basically. So I'm just saying that we're not saying that Axelrod bought everything he was told necessarily.
Right.
But what sort of influence did these guys have on him? And it was an interesting... thing that they came across him and helped kick his career going.
Well, and all it takes for a liberal is to be influenced or reared or even mentored by a communist, and then suddenly you can't talk about the mentors, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the end of it. Whereas if you get a conservative who had any association whatsoever with people from the extreme right, you know, the New York Times and liberal public, they're not going to hesitate to talk about that, and you're finished.
Yeah, I don't. That's something I was going to deal with later in the story or in the interview, but let's hit that now, I guess. I mean, because you're saying that the mainstream press is afraid to touch that stuff. So is it that they're afraid of it, or is it that they're fine with it and they're like giving the big pat on the back because
it's a complicated question. I mean, the main reason is that they don't want their guys to be tainted with this stuff. With Obama, in the case of Frank Marshall Davis, who was an actual literal card-carrying member of Communist Party USA.
Sure.
You know, Frank Marshall Davis was Obama's mentor in Hawaii throughout the 1970s, throughout Obama's adolescence. And Frank Marshall Davis's Communist Party card number is 47544. I have a 600-page FBI file. I know this up and down. It's the subject of my next book. But Axelrod, his two mentors, Don Rose and David Kanner, Don Rose is on the far left. I can't say that he was ever a communist or a member of the Communist Party. But David Kanner, he comes from a family of that. And in fact, David Kanner's father, Harry Jacob Kanner, was actually ran for governor of Massachusetts on the Communist Party ticket. He was actually secretary of the Boston Communist Party. So, and Harry and his son David, remember, David is the mentor, Harry gets recruited to the Soviet Union, where he basically works translating works of Lenin from Russian into English. And so David is raised by Harry, and then David becomes a mentor to David Axelrod. And both David and Don Rose, you know, even if they're not reading to David Axelrod from the Gospel according to Karl Marx, they clearly influenced him on political consulting, even on working with African American candidates. They have that very, very similar commonality there. So, you know, clearly there were influences here to some degree. And you can't, you know, you can't even ask these questions to people like Axelrod. These guys were communists. Do they have any influence on you? You even ask that question, and liberals start accusing you of McCarthyism, of trying to smear them. And you know, what I'm saying is, let's just have an honest conversation. If Axelrod comes out and acknowledges that these guys were indeed mentors who had these who had these radical associations, and then he says, "But look, you know, we had some conversations about communism, and I'm no communist, and I reject it." Then he'd basically be clean of it. He would at least have addressed it. But the way this stuff works with these liberal Democrats is they don't even have to address it. It gets raised by conservatives like me. And then it just gets ignored by liberal biographers and press people, and they never ever have to account for it. And you see it again and again in my book, The Crusader, which you talked about earlier, Carl. The Crusader, Ronald Reagan and the Fall of Communism. I present a document from Ted Kennedy, it's a KGB document on a Ted Kennedy secret offer to the Soviets in May 1983, May 14th, 1983. It's completely legitimate. No one's ever denied that it's not true. Kennedy went to his grave never having to account for that.
What was his offer that he made to them? Do you know?
In fact, the entire document I publish in both Russian and English, English translation.
Wow.
And the offer described Ronald Reagan as the current threat to peace, especially in U.S.-Soviet relations. And it was set in the context of Reagan's reelection. Basically, we got to defeat Reagan. And Kennedy then offers to the Soviets how to help the Soviets to present their message of peace directly to the American public, to go around Ronald Reagan and his alleged smokescreen of propaganda. Mm. Kennedy offers to go to Moscow, meet with the Soviets. I know this all sounds conspiratorial, but it's all true. Offers to go there and meet with the Soviets. Offers to bring Yuri Andropov and the Soviet leadership to the United States, where they would talk to the American media. Kennedy would even help arrange interviews with media friends The letter mentions Walter Cronkite and Barbara Walters by name. It's all in there. It's completely true.
Wow.
The Kennedy staff didn't say that it wasn't true. they argued with the interpretation of it, but they didn't disavow the document. They know it's true. And I reported that first in 2006. That's when the Crusader came out. I reported it again in Dupes in 2010. And Kennedy never had the answer for it. Never. He went to his grave protected on this. And if you had anybody from the right, who any conservative who would make a similar offer to some far-right regime against a sitting Democratic president, and by the way, we have this from the Matrokin archives, Kennedy made the same kind of offer against Jimmy Carter in March of 1980.
So Carter and Reagan were both the greatest threat to world peace.
Yeah, exactly.
Despite the fact they're completely different parties and philosophies.
Yeah, and the commonality here in both situations is that Kennedy was the front runner in the Democratic primary to dislodge Jimmy Carter as the incumbent in 1980.
Oh, well.
And in 1984, they thought he was going to challenge Reagan. He ended up not. But, you know, both of these are made in, so Kennedy did this to his own political flesh
and
blood.
That's so dirty.
And I tried to tell liberals, look, you know, this guy did this to one of your own. And by the way, Jimmy Carter knows about this. You know, Jimmy Carter knows that this happened. But if you're a liberal, you can get away with this stuff. And then they turn to people like me, and they say, oh, you sound like Joe McCarthy talking about all this communist conspiracy stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the end of it. And they don't take me seriously, and they write it all off as right-wing conspiracy. And here I am writing these 600-page books, 250,000 words with all these footnotes and documentation and carefully laying out all of the stuff and
sure.
being as scholarly as I can and saying, okay, well, it says this, but it doesn't say that, and be careful here. This guy is not a communist. This guy maybe is. This guy was a party member. This guy wasn't. This person was, you know, once here and is now there. I'm making all these nuanced distinctions, you know, being careful, trying to be fair. And then in the end, what happens? They just ignore the entire thing.
Mm. So then you mentioned one other thing that I wanted to ask about. What was it about? What is it about people like Axelrod and Cantor and Rose that draws them to pursue candidates of the African American background?
Yeah, it just happened to be that it started with in the case of Rose and Cantor, their interest in the mayoral campaign of Harold Washington in Chicago.
Yeah,
who became Chicago's first black mayor.
Uh-huh.
And they were involved in that. And then after that, other African American candidates. And they sort of had a specialty in that area, and David Axelrod picked that up. He's represented a number of prominent African American politicians throughout the country, with Obama being the coup de grace.
Okay, so then with regard to let's see, I'm just jumping ahead in the article here. You were saying that he also became tight with Axelrod, became like this legendary, like at one point he wound up at the Chicago Tribune, partly due to recommendations from Cantor and Rose. He moved up from this little neighborhood paper to getting at the Trib, and then he moved into political consulting, and he racked up like an astounding 80% victory rate, winning 33 of 42 campaigns. Mm-hmm. And so what was his secret to success for being such a remarkable success?
Well, he's very shrewd. He's good at what he does. Mm-hmm. He's very good at coming up with a message for a politician, a theme, building a campaign around it. Some people also consider him ruthless.
Uh-huh.
I would say one thing that's very clear is that, as many people said, he sort of falls in love with his candidates. I mean, he really likes the people that he signs on with. And on the other end, to the contrary, he really despises their opponents.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah,
and he is clearly he's very partisan.
Yeah,
maybe even more partisan than ideological. Although he's clearly a leftist.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, basically, if you're a Republican, you've got two horns protruding out of your head, and yeah, that's all there is to it. So you know, I expect whoever the Republican nominee will be this year, he's going to go after him full force. If it would have been Rick Santorum, he would have portrayed Santorum as a conservative caveman who wants to ban birth control.
Sure.
And if it's going to be Romney, which it apparently is, look out. This is going to be a class warfare campaign unlike any that you've ever seen.
Really? Huh. Well, one thing that I thought was interesting also in the article, a little side part, is actually to me the most shocking, that basically that he got involved with his firm was working with like front groups and was messing with the electricity rates in Illinois. That ComEd, the big electricity company, they wanted to raise their prices in Illinois without looking like the bad guy to people. So I don't know if you can explain that easily to people. What Axelrod did, because to me it's just like, wow, you know, here he and his ilk are claiming they're on the side of the people. They're on the side because only a liberal could be on the side of the people. And then what they did was downright shockingly scummy, I think, about what they did with electricity rates that sucked it to everybody, made them suffer more higher prices.
Yeah, well, he has this group called ASK Strategies.
Uh-huh.
And the A is for Axelrod, the S and the K are for two of his partners. And what they do there, the focus of ASK is not so much political candidates, but organizations and corporate clients. And they master the use of front groups. And that's very ironic because Axelrod's mentors, as communists, mastered the use of front groups.
Yeah.
They would take a group and call it Committed Liberals for the American Way, right? Committed Liberals for Peace. And in fact, it would be totally staffed by literal members of Communist Party USA. But what they did, it's a notorious example. They took the company ComEd, and ComEd sought ASK's advice. ASK advised ComEd, and ComEd was about electricity in Illinois. They wanted to charge higher electricity prices to people in the state of Illinois. So what's the best way to do that? Well, ASK advised ComEd to form a group called CORE, and CORE was Consumers Organized for Reliable Electricity,
uh-huh.
which in turn described itself as, quote, a coalition of individuals, businesses, and organizations, unquote. And this group, CORE, then ran ads, which was written by ASK, direly warning about blackouts throughout the entire state of Illinois if electricity rates weren't hiked. And in fact, as Bloomberg News caught this, they reported this, they broke the story. ComEd later acknowledged that ComEd itself had bankrolled this entire $15 million PR effort.
Yeah, and then later on, when there was time for Barack Obama to run for president, ComEd, the employees of ComEd and his parent Exelon contributed $181,711 to his presidential bid, more than workers at any other company in the state. So he pulls this crap and then turns around and milks the employees for contributions to his candidate du jour. Then another thing, okay, so he gets involved with Barack, meets him over the years at all these different things where Barack is the golden boy. And then suddenly, I've always been fascinated with the 2002 Barack Obama speech that he was the first got him buzzed. 2004 is what put him on the map where people are like, oh, look out for him in 2008 but at the convention. But in 2002, I always said, you know, he got a lot of credit for taking an anti-war stand on Iraq before it happened. But at the same time, it was in such a small venue that I didn't really think it was that ballsy a move at all. But if you can comment on that speech and its ramifications for the Axelrod-Obama, relationship.
And by the way, I've got to be off in 2 minutes.
Oh, right? Shoot. Okay, got it.
Short. Well, it was at October 2002, Obama spoke at Federal Plaza in Chicago. And the target here was George Bush and his policy in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
And they put together a group called Chicagoans Against the War in Iraq. And this was made up of old SDS types, old Vietnam war protesters. And Obama spoke there, and Obama consulted Axelrod beforehand on how to talk, what to say. And Axelrod shrewdly advised him, you know, give the speech, appeal to the liberal Chicago base, but be careful not to alienate moderates and a wider base of voters. And so Obama did that. And, you know, there's a line in there where he warned about this, an occupation of undetermined length with undetermined costs and undetermined consequences, which is a good line, and to some degree happened. And, you know, liberals have sort of grabbed onto that line and you know, show that as an example of Obama's sort of early wisdom on foreign policy.
Well, I think that if I could get away with one more question within a second, but I just want to say on that, the reason why I didn't think it took much guts for him to do that was that at the time he was just a state senator. He had no vote on the war. He had no say in anything that was going to be happening. So it's like, ooh, that's really gutsy to come out and be against something that you're not even going to be voting on anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, but
I guess part of a larger Senate bid and run
sure.
for national office.
Yeah, absolutely, sure. But I guess if I may, the last thing I want to ask is, you're talking about how Axelrod helped create the Obama team and message of the hope and change and all that stuff, you know, and that they basically intentionally kept it vague. And just, you know, with these positive platitudes that didn't really say anything. And Obama was even chewed out by Tom Daschle, Senate Majority Leader, during his incredibly brief time in the Senate. He voted over 100 times or maybe 150 times present, meaning he didn't even have the guts to take a stand on a zillion different issues. And he said to Daschle, I don't want to have a paper trail for when I run for higher office. And Daschle was just like taken aback at this guy's arrogance for saying right. something like that early. So I guess this is the last going out thing, and then people can find the article at American Spectator at thespectator.org. What do you have to say about that whole keep things vague and shiny happy, don't look at the message behind the man kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, they do some of that. I mean, they like to blur the distinctions on things that could really hurt Obama and show him to be ideologically to the far left, but at the same time, anytime you see this stuff like Republican war on women,
yeah.
You know, the Catholic Church wanting to, as the bad guy in this contraception mandate, when it's really Obama
mm-hmm.
and his mandate that's forcing the Catholic Church to react,
yeah.
You know, kind of attacking the Supreme Court. I see all of this as sort of classic Saul Alinsky, Axelrod, you know, pick your enemy, define it, demonize it, focus on it. And that's when you really see Obama's true colors, and that's
sure.
where he's going after that hard liberal base. And so I see the markings of Axelrod in any of those campaign slogans, mantras, tactics.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, and we appreciate your time. And
sure.
hopefully we'll talk to you about when the book comes out about Frank Marshall Davis. I think that should
sure.
be some entertaining reading there, man. That
yeah.
guy's a piece of work. And
glad
so,
to have you, Carl.
Pardon me? Okay,
I'd
great.
Happy to do that.
Absolutely. Well, thanks a lot, and thanks for listening, folks.
All right. Take
Bye.
Care.